This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
America's favorite place to watch football is Stadium Swim, located at Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. Catch all the biggest games at a viewing experience built for sports fans. Chill in one of their six pools on three different levels for a perfect view of their massive screen. Plenty of seating options from cozy daybeds to private, temperature-controlled cabanas. Stadium Swim. Book your spot today at CircaLasVegas.com.
Sports Radio 610 presents Pain and Pendergast.
Yeah, my pain is always the same on that. I mean, we're with Nick and his staff, we're always looking to make our team as good as we could possibly be, right? Do we have a heightened sense of just making a move just to make? No, we're always looking to add to our team, add to our depth. That's something we do constantly throughout the year. So there isn't just a mad rush now at the trade deadline for us to change our approach and how we go about managing our roster. Our roster management doesn't change. Right? We're always looking to upgrade.
All right, that was D'Amico Ryans on Monday at his Monday press conference. So that was before the trade deadline. Trade deadline came and went. The only move the Texans end up making this week was trading Khalil Davis, defensive tackle, to the 49ers for a seventh round pick in 2026. They were going to cut him anyways, it would appear, so they're just getting something for a guy that was going to be put back out there on the market. They got a lot of guys coming back from injuries here, including and suspension, with Mario Edwards coming back on the defensive line. As we welcome you into the 7 o'clock hour here on Payne and Pendergast, you can send a text to the 5-Hour Energy fan line. 5-Hour Energy, the official energy shot of Sports Radio 610 and football super fans. Text here, Seth. A lot of fans are acting like the Texans are not all in. They're all in. They got hit by the injury bug. Let's not act like Nick didn't make huge moves in the offseason. Nick thinks about the long term. He's not in the quick fix business.
Right. Yeah, and you know, like that's a. I don't want to say that's kind of trite, because like there are other teams that are in it for the long term too that did make moves. Like the Chiefs have done repeatedly over the last couple years, and they've won Super Bowls.
It's worked.
I don't know
if
you paid attention, they won a Super Bowl with Kadarius Toney as one of their key pieces. So I understand, and I've said the exact same thing, which is it is always a matter of balancing out the long term versus the short term. And yes, this team was very aggressive in the offseason, and I think that that Nick, in terms of how far he wanted to push the boundaries and how far you're pushing things off into the future, They've got a lot of money pushed off into later years right now that's going to hit the cap. Stephon Diggs is going to count against the cap next year.
$16 million,
yeah,
Stephon
without
Diggs.
without being under contract.
Yeah.
So I think Nick's appetite for trades was probably on the conservative side, and I get it. But I don't think it's as simple as, well, no, good teams don't do this. No, good teams do it.
Yeah.
And sometimes it works out, sometimes it doesn't. But it's a little bit more complex than, like, well, no, smart teams don't make moves at the trade deadline.
Yeah, I think I compare some of the reaction yesterday that I saw and heard and got on my phone from texts and things like that, mm-hmm, to the first day of free agency this year. Remember the first day of free agency where Christian Wilkins is going for a king's ransom and this big name's going here, that big name's going there, Texans aren't doing anything, and everybody's going, oh, they're not. See, look, you got all this cap space. And then, as it turns out, you wind up with Joe Mixon and you wind up with Danielle Hunter and Azeez Al-Shaair, and you wind up with guys. It turns out the Texans wound up being very active. So I compare the reaction to that. Ultimately, those people who were reacting that way were calmed by the fact that they were active, the Texans, in free agency eventually. I think maybe some of the reaction to people who are very disappointed or even angry about this, about them not being active at the trade deadline, is the realization like, okay, this is then by and large the team you're moving forward. This is your, sure, you can pluck guys off of other teams' practice squads. There may be some veterans that get waived like Derek Barnett was last year or whatever, stuff like that. That's all true, but I think it's the realization like, okay, the chance for making any substantial moves is gone. Like, this is, there's this feeling at least that this is the team, this is our team, and this is who we're moving forward with. Is it good enough?
I think part of it too is that really the biggest whiff from the way the Texans have handled the offensive line right now is that they kept on with the Kenyon Green experiment for far too long. And that, yes, okay, he's a first rounder, he's got upside, all of that. Man, it's not working out, and I don't know when it's going to click for him. But at the very least, you could have had a better feel about what it looks like with Jarrett Patterson in there at left guard if you'd done it a couple games earlier. That this undying, unwavering trust and support of a guy that you gave the year off last. You gave Kenyon Green the year off last year. And he came back and he looked better, great. But he's just flat out not getting the job done.
Well, and if I'm misremembering this, then correct me, but they didn't even really make it a competitive situation in training camp either. He was handed the first string job at left guard again and was pretty much a fixture out there. Like, I don't remember them doing a ton of like, okay, they're the ones with Kenyon Green, there's all the ones with Jarrett Patterson, there's all the ones with Kendrick. I don't remember that happening.
Jarrett Patterson got to play right guard, if I remember correctly, in the Steelers game, and he hadn't ever played right guard before, and it didn't look great, but none of the offensive linemen looked great in the preseason. So, yeah, that's our, and I know we've got at least several listeners who are adamantly like disgruntled that Jarrett Patterson wasn't getting a chance to compete, and I was a little bit more blasé about it. I would say for right now, I'm going to say, those guys can claim victory over, unless Jarrett Patterson gets there and is just a flamed out mess or something. It's you were correct on that.
Yep.
There are a lot of things the Texans were doing during training camp that I thought were kind of experimental, but like, okay, they'll abandon this experiment when it's time. Kenyon Green was one of them, and they did not abandon it. We don't know if they ever would have.
Right.
They might have kept them in there for the entire duration of the season.
Yeah.
Given on the way that ultimately CJ Stroud's the guy that dislocated his Kenyon's shoulder and sent him out for the year.
CJ had to break his shoulder. Yeah, it's unfortunate. Here's Nick Caserio on Texans All Access. The interview's up on YouTube. I'm sure it's going to run on Texans All Access today, I'm guessing. It's a good conversation with Nick, and they talked a little trade deadline. Here is Nick Caserio's view on the trade deadline. Let's see if this matches up with the behavior of the team at the trade deadline.
Yeah, not to be too contrite, but, I mean, it's usually much ado about nothing. So, essentially, a lot of players that get moved, A, are on a kind of expiring type contracts. B, hasn't worked out with their team. Most of it is kind of late round picks, some flips, essentially. You saw a few trades there, but a compensation maybe was a little bit bigger than what it was. But you're kind of looking at your team. If there's an opportunity to add a player that you have a specific defined role for, great. If not, it's just, you know, you're not going to do something just to do something, just to create a bunch of busy work. So it's on the calendar. It's there for teams. I mean, I think half the league voted to move the deadline a week. Another half voted to leave it where it is. So whenever it is, we'll prepare accordingly. We always contact teams throughout the course of the fall, look for opportunities. So once you kind of get through the trade, the only thing that's different for the trade deadline is after Tuesday, everybody has to go through the waiver wire, including the vested players. So it's not as simple as you terminate a player, and if you want to flip them to the practice squad, there's a 24-hour period where they have to go through. So some of it is just roster mechanics and roster logistics. But in the end, it's probably much ado about nothing. And it's everybody just has to do what they think is best for their football team and just try to make good decisions.
I think part of it too, Sean, is, I mean, everything that Nick just said, he could have also phrased this way, which wouldn't have helped his cause out much. But I've already got this team chock full of old guys on short-term contracts or deals that are, like, Stephon Diggs is going to count how much against the cap next year?
16. They pushed $16 million into voidable years in the future.
$16 million into voidable years. Danico Autry is 34 years old.
Yeah.
He's got more years left on his deal. Yeah. We've got Danielle Hunter on a 2-year contract. They've got a lot of old guys already. with one or two years remaining that don't feel super comfortable right now, that I can see in terms of the team composition, they're probably hesitant. Like I mentioned, Brandon Scherff, he's 33 years old, offensive guard for the Jaguars, at least could step in and be a, give you a journeyman caliber effort. But he's 33 years old, and I think that that's a lot of it. The team composition right now, and you've made this point, the Joe Mixon trade and the Stephon Diggs trade, those are kind of classic trade deadline type of trades.
Yeah.
And that was how I justified the Stephon Diggs trade in the offseason. I said, well, look, if you traded for a Stephon Diggs at the trade deadline, if you traded a second-round pick, and let's say he only had 1 year remaining or it was an expiring contract, then I think people would have said, yeah, there's a lot of precedent for that. That makes sense. But you went ahead and did those proactively in the offseason, and you kind of you didn't have any rounds left in the chamber for a move like
that.
Yeah,
they were ultra aggressive. I'm trying to look at this glass half full, because as I pointed out, I do think there were probably some small moves there available for the taking that could have had big impact if you get just for depth. If something happens to Joe Mixon, my God, what does this running back room look like? If something happens to Tank Dell or Nico Collins, my God, what does this wide receiver room look like? And I'm not saying you go out and trade for Joe Mixon 1A or a guy who's the equivalent of Nico Collins, but I think you needed to probably, in my opinion, especially at the prices, draft compensation wise, and maybe even salary wise. I think that you needed to go get guys that are better than Dameon Pierce, guys that are better than Xavier Hutchinson and John Mechie. That would have been
honestly, really, when you look at it too, and this doesn't excuse Nick Caserio from criticism, obviously, but it's that the moves that they made to try to push this into being a Super Bowl roster, they made those in the offseason, and a lot of them haven't panned out. The defense is looking like some version of what you hoped it could be, and that was without Danico Autry for the first part of the season. So some of the moves he made in the offseason so far, they've looked pretty good defensively. On offense, you already had three really good receivers at the beginning of the season, and you didn't do squat with it. The offense was not a high-powered offense with all of that.
Yeah.
You've got one of the highest-paid offensive lines in football, and yet you've got some of the worst pass protection in football. You've got your bright young quarterback that you feel good about. On paper, none of that has changed. And other than the left guard position, which is what you were taking the biggest gamble on, was that, okay, these interior offensive linemen, these young guys are going to work out. That was the one area you weren't aggressive. And it so far, it's blown up in your face.
It's biting you.
Like, just blown up huge in your face.
Yeah.
And that's the hard part, is that I understand why you wouldn't be aggressive right now, because you've already kind of spent all your aggression in the offseason. And yet, okay, the product isn't what you thought it was going to be. This is a mediocre offense at best. On its good days, it's a mediocre offense. And there's really no excuse for it on any level. From D'Amico, the head coach, to Nick Caserio, the general manager, and certainly to Bobby Slowick, the second-year offensive coordinator.
Yeah, and so far, the only change that's been made is change that's been thrust upon them by injury. You know, losing Nico and Diggs, you lost them to injury, but those are guys you wanted to keep. I think, as you pointed out, like, Kenyon Green was just this red siren sitting there at left guard, and you just kept trotting him out there, and who knows, might still be trotting him out there had CJ not landed on his shoulder and injured him. So it's going to be an interesting practice today, man, to see what those ones look like out there on the offensive line, see who's out there.
You know, if Patterson's out of the protocol, who do you expect them to insert at left
Patterson.
Guard?
Patterson. Yeah, okay. 100%. Yeah, Patterson. Yeah. No, I think there's some...
Well, and that's another part of it, too, I think. Again, I think they extended it out too long with Kenyon Green, but I think Caserio probably looks at it and thinks, all right, man, we muddled through and were better last year with an assortment of various left guards, including Juice Scruggs, who wasn't great as a guard.
Yeah.
And we managed to look better than we look right now.
Absolutely. So the deals that got made around the NFL yesterday, I think that this is another thing that's hurting the Texans in the eyes of the people who are angry about, who are, you know, either disappointed or just mad about the trade deadline and the way it went, is that literally every other team that is a top five seed in the AFC right now, it made moves, you know, made moves for names, you know, and so again, the name doesn't guarantee production, but it does shape perception, and that's what we're talking about here. And if you're looking at these, Seth, if you're a Texan fan, which of the teams, I'm going to go through the other four teams, Kansas City, Buffalo, Pittsburgh, and Baltimore, how nervous are you that these teams, like how much better did these teams make themselves through the eyes of a Texans fan? I'll start at the very top. Kansas City traded for DeAndre Hopkins and Josh Uche. And we've already got a body of work with Hopkins there in Kansas City.
Okay, so nervousness is interesting because I feel like the Chiefs have already demonstrated what they can do with DeAndre Hopkins. He had two touchdown receptions the other night. And they did it on the ground. They were able to have a ground and short passing game that really just methodically drove down the field against the Bucs, kind of squeezed the life out of them in a close game.
Yep.
So it's not like they look like a high-powered offense, but I think that Andy Reid is just... Is Andy Reid a better offensive coordinator than Bobby Slowik?
Yes.
He
is.
They were already, but I was already at a spot where I didn't feel good about the Texans versus Kansas City.
Sure.
And now I feel even worse. Yeah. And it makes me feel worse about my offensive coordinator. It's a constant reminder that, yeah, Bobby Slowik is certainly not an Andy Reid. And he's not capable of getting the absolute most out of CJ Stroud the way Andy Reid is capable of getting the most out of Pat Mahomes. And by the way, the Chiefs offense has been kind of, they've been mid this year so far.
Oh, yeah, yeah, Mahomes
especially. But they've got a demonstrated ability to emerge from mid to, damn.
Yeah. Well, and the fact, for Texan fans specifically, like the Hopkins trade, and especially the way he played on Monday night around the league, should send a message to teams like, oh, crap, the best just got better. The message is even more acute here that it's freaking Hopkins. You know what I mean? Like, he's catching that ball in between three guys down near the goal line down there. I'm like, he used to do that for us.
Now Nico is the trade deadline move. That's my projection.
Okay.
Yeah, Nico's coming back. And that'll be our big trade line acquisition was Nico Collins coming off of IR and Mario Edwards coming back from his substances of abuse.
yeah. Oh, yeah, Aziz Alshire coming back, you know.
It's one of the okay, listen, everybody. Just take a little brief moment. If you want to feel good about the Texans right now, the one thing that they do have going for them is that D'Amico has a squeaky clean reputation, and people look at him as just kind of like the, oh, golly gee, aw shucks. And yet, you know, last year they had a full 50 or 75% of guys who had been suspended for unsportsmanlike conduct in the league last year.
We're on our roster.
The Texans had three of them. Kareem Jackson, it didn't happen while Kareem Jackson was here, but he was on the roster at one point.
Yeah.
And he got suspended last year. And then also, man, we've just got a boatload of defensive linemen coming back from suspension at any given moment.
Yeah, man.
Yeah.
D-line likes to party, man. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. There are
like the Raiders of the 70s, bro. Mario Edwards, is basically John Matuszak. Yeah.
Yeah, you know what it is? They're making up for the ghost of John Matuszak.
That's it.
It didn't work out for Matuszak with the Oilers.
That's right.
But God, he was exactly the right fit for the Raiders. Yeah.
What a strange homage. But
we brought John Matuszak back.
Hey, man, yes.
America's favorite place to watch football is Stadium Swim, located at Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. Catch all the biggest games and a viewing experience built for sports fans. Chill in one of their six pools on three different levels for a perfect view of their massive screen. Plenty of seating options from cozy daybeds to private, temperature-controlled cabanas. Stadium Swim. Book your spot today at CircaLasVegas.com.
I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
So Kansas City, yes, I think the entire NFL is like, oh, crap, they got Hopkins. They got him for nothing. You know what I mean? They got him for a fifth. What about Amari Cooper to Buffalo? That was their big move.
Amari Cooper to Buffalo, let's pretend he's healthy right now.
Yeah.
I think that was another one where, because we didn't get to see Buffalo at full force, they didn't have Khalil Shakir. I think that one, I don't fear the Bills as much as I fear the Chiefs, but that one might have been the biggest impact move. If Amari Cooper can be healthy, you know, when he comes back.
Yeah.
That one might be the biggest swing.
Yeah.
That takes them from being like, oh, okay, it's still Josh Allen kind of pulling this thing together, but with bailing wire too. Okay, with Khalil Shakir and Amari Cooper out there, yeah, this is scary.
Pittsburgh traded yesterday for Mike Williams from the Jets, the wide receiver, and Preston Smith, the edge rusher, for the Green Bay Packers.
They're already stacking, they're stacking an edge rusher on top of a defense that's already doing really good things. And
it has great edge rushers already also.
Yeah, but I still, like, ultimately you're limited by your quarterback and what he can do. Yeah. So it doesn't, I admire their pluck where, okay, yeah, they're a team that's going to perennially, no matter who their quarterback is, they're going to be in the playoff hunt because of Mike Tomlin and because of their personnel. That's they're probably ranked appropriately at third most impactful.
Well, that's not the impact. That's not the seeding. Yeah.
It's kind of, okay, I've got Buffalo number one, then Kansas City number two. Then I would put, I would put Pittsburgh number three.
In terms of how much nervousness the moves create?
And how much genuine impact does it make? Yeah. Does it lift them up into contender status?
Yeah.
You can't count out Mike Tomlin for anything.
No. Where are you on the Deontay Johnson and Tre'Davious White trades for Baltimore?
I don't think Tre'Davious White is going to all of a sudden... This isn't going to be like the Roquan Smith trade to the Ravens a couple years ago.
Oh, God, no.
Roquan Smith got traded to the Ravens, and it felt like, yep, this feels like right.
Yeah.
It feels like Roquan Smith is a Raven, and you ended up getting the best out of it. It allowed the other linebacker there. Patrick Queen.
Yep.
It allowed Patrick Queen to be more of a free-flowing, just go-make-plays type of player.
Yeah.
And that ended up being a big change for them. I don't think Tre'Davious White has that same impact to where all of a sudden it turns into a classic Ravens defense.
No, I mean, he went for like a seventh-round pick swap. And so he's a big name. And look, he's a big name. Now, he's going to the Ravens, which means whatever the best version of him is in 2024, they will get that out of Tre'Davious. It may not be a great player, but they'll get the best version of him right now.
And I think Deontay Johnson is a good move to give one extra piece for an offense. Look, Baltimore has been through this song and dance where they can look scary as hell in the regular season, and then it kind of shrivels up in the postseason. I think they're constructed differently this year. I mean, this Derrick Henry's a bona fide headache, like a literal headache for defenses. But they've been through this before, and they want to be able to win in multiple ways in the postseason. So it makes a lot of sense. I don't think it substantially changes them as much. So I'm still – remember, this isn't a ranking of where I feel – like, this isn't a power rankings of those teams. But I think it's a nice complimentary piece for the Ravens.
Yeah. I think the other thing – one of the other things, just as I'm looking at these moves and I'm looking at the seeding in the AFC, I'm looking at the logos of the teams, I think one of the other things – if I'm just taking a step back and trying to grade the perception of people and of the Texans at the trade deadline, that they didn't do anything, that they're, quote, not all in, that they, quote, think they're the smartest guys, that they've got their guys and they're good with it or whatever. These are all things that we've seen people text or heard them say, that the two teams that are sandwiching them literally in the seedings right now in the AFC, Pittsburgh and Baltimore, made little tweak type moves, like cheap type moves, but for some name value at positions where they can have impact for those teams. And that those are two teams that I think are considered two of maybe the three or four best run teams in football. Not over the last 3 years, like over the last 25 years. Like those are teams that have a culture. Those are teams that are able to evaluate. Those are teams that get the best out of guys, most of the time. Yeah. And I think that hurts the perception, too. Like, oh, so you're smarter. You're smarter. I'm not saying this is me saying this. I'm saying this is like what people who are hypercritical of the Texans over the last 24 hours are saying. Oh, so you're smarter than the Steelers and the Ravens? 4-seed Texans, you're smarter than the 3-seed Steelers and the 5-seed Ravens who are making moves at the deadline?
Look, this is the way I look at it. I have zero clue whether Nick Caserio is looking at it this way or not. But I'd look at this as, look, I went out and we made a boatload of moves in the offseason. This roster, this depth chart, everything about the way we're spending money on offense already is a team that should be better on offense than it is.
Yeah.
And this is on, D'Amico will say over and over and over again, these are fixable issues that we've had. All right, then go out and fix them, Bobby Slowick.
Yeah.
Go out and fix them, Chris Strausser.
Yep.
Go out and fix them, Ben McDaniels. Like, you guys know, I'm not giving you more. I'm not, it just, am I going to go give I'm going to give you more to worry. It's like giving Bernie Madoff more money after he's already been indicted. Like, no, you guys are not managing these assets properly. Get it right. That's how I feel about it.
Yeah.
If I'm Nick Caserio,
yeah.
I don't know if that's how he's not kind of wired that same way, but I am.
Well, if the offensive line were playing even average right now, I don't think people are that angry about the lack of moves at the trade deadline. You know, like
right.
if the offensive line were playing average, it would mean the offense itself is probably above average, maybe even well above average. And I would probably still want some depth pieces. Like to me, it's more about the potential medical situation of the overall team. I'm talking about trade deadline specifically. I don't think that the offensive line was going to get fixed here at the trade deadline. I'm more disappointed that they are out. They're out over their skis at a couple of positions depth wise right now. That's what I'm concerned about.
And I think also with the offensive line, I think there's some ways. This is where I don't like it when tradition does you in, and you know, offensive linemen needing to be all five guys out there all the time. Yeah, that's great when circumstances are ideal, but it's kind of like, all right, well, but your circumstances aren't ideal at left guard, and you can't rotate your left guard, then they'll have no continuity. You don't have continuity already,
right?
You know. Just make somebody compete within the game. I don't give a damn.
Right.
Like, don't be beholden to tradition when things aren't working. It's like saying, why isn't this baseball team playing more small ball? Why don't they bunt more? Well, because in modern baseball, you don't have any jackasses that can actually bunt anymore.
Yeah, it's true.
So you're kind of and then I would say the same, trading for an offensive lineman. Well, it's not traditionally done. Right. Because of all those arguments about continuity and scheme and everything else like that,
yeah.
I think that you could plug in any journeyman, blue-collar offensive guard right now from around the league, and you'd be getting better offensive line play,
yeah.
Whether he knows the system or not. Just put him out there, and in those one-on-one pass rush situations, you've got a better shot with journeyman veteran versus Kenyon Green. So, yeah, this is a huge vote of confidence for Jarrett Patterson. There is no vote of confidence for Kendrick Green because disgraced him once.
Yeah.
Yeah, embarrassed him once by not putting him in the game after Kenyon Green had been benched. So, there's a lot riding on young Jarrett Patterson right now.
I wonder. I mean, look, they tried out like four different street free agents this week. I wonder how much because one of the things Nick talked about in that interview with John and Mark. Yes, that's up on YouTube and that'll run on Texans All Access this week, was the practice squads of all the other teams. Like now that NFL teams are allowed to have like six veterans on the practice squad, before the practice squad was all guys, before COVID, was all guys that were just in their first, second, or third year. It was all young guys by rule.
Yeah.
And now I do want, and I'm not saying this is a great solution, but to your point that anything's better than what they were getting at left guard,
yeah.
I do wonder if they've got like a short list or like a, you know, a list of like 10 interior offensive linemen on other teams from around the league, that if they trot Jarrett Patterson out there this week and it's not good, they go pluck them. Because if you pluck somebody off of somebody's practice squad, they have to be on your 53-man roster for at least three games. So if you're plucking somebody from somebody else's team, this is your new left guard, you know?
Like, yeah, it is. Yeah,
such so a depressing it's a, dude. This is such a depressing conversation for a team that has like B plus to A plus players at so many spots on the roster right now. You know what I mean?
You know what, Sean? Honestly, I was just like, this is probably too dark for
like
for
the left guard. That the position left guard is Sean, torpedoing everything.
Sean, we're in an age now where, man, you hear about just somebody, one of your classmates that died at a relatively young age in his 50s or something, and that, man, if he would have just gone to get his colon cancer screening,
right?
You know, like you let that irregularly shaped mole on your back go for too long, and man, it was preventable. It was so preventable if you had caught it early.
Yes,
and it feels like that left guard position was just it was a malignant tumor that they let go for way too long, and it would have been preventable.
If he had just gone in for his left guardoscopy,
if he had just pooped into a cup and sent it off.
Yeah.
Which always feels weird.
Yeah.
You know, you don't even have to go to get a colonoscopy anymore. You just get, you poop in a cup.
Just send it in. Yeah.
And then they mail it in the mail along with everybody else's fruitcakes and everything else. It's weird. It's weird. But you could get a heads up on your cancer.
That is your PSA, people, right there. See? Thank
you. Kid, know what? Someday you will be wrapping up a box of your own poop and sending it off in a UPS package.
Hey, man, listen. There's tens of thousands of hundreds of thousands of people possibly listening right now.
Yeah.
Kenyon Green, by being compared to a disfigured mole or some sort of colon issue, may have saved somebody's life with that. You may have saved somebody's life with that analogy. And by proxy, Kenyon Green might have saved somebody's life. All right?
Yeah.
So, yes. So now, are we sacrificing the physical well-being of C.J. Stroud and possibly in the pocket psychological well-being of C.J. Stroud and this team's Super Bowl chances to save one random Houstonian? Yes. And is that a fair balancing act? I'll leave that up to the listener to decide. But I'm merely pointing out that we may have saved somebody's life just now.
And then ultimately it all so goes back on Bobby Slowick. Yeah. And I know Chris Strausser is the easy whipping boy in all of this, but they also have, like, I watched some of the... I watch the way the offensive line operates, and like their pass sets are just like, just everything's sloppy, and guys are just inviting open lanes for pass rushers to loop inside. And man, a lot of that could be cured with coaching, and yet you do have veteran offensive linemen on that team that should be somewhat immune to bad coaching.
Yeah.
And they're not operating like they are in that regard either. So it's just a mess that all flows back to Bobby Slowick. Everything in the passing game, the way they execute their screens, or I should say don't execute their screens, all these things that can help out with pass protection, they don't do any of that either, and that falls back on Bobby Slowick.
Yeah, I mean, the offensive line's a mess, no doubt, and I know people are disappointed about the lack of trades at the trade deadline. I will point out the Texans are in a better spot than most teams right now, and I'll point out two specific examples. One, you could be a Cowboy fan, okay?
Yeah.
They traded for Jonathan Mingo yesterday, the wide receiver, second-year wide receiver from the Carolina Panthers. How about the Carolina Panthers? Like, we got to get Bryce some weapons. So they trade away one of the guys they drafted with him last year. They trade away Deontay Johnson. They're like, we got to get him weapons. And then like 8 weeks later, like, not these weapons.
Okay.
But Jonathan Mingo is, like, if you look at a lot of the advanced metrics for wide receivers, and some of this may have to do with the team that he plays on, I get it.
Well,
he's like the worst in the league. He's the worst receiver in the league, and they gave up a fourth round pick to get him.
No, Jonathan Mingo, there was no excusing away some of the stuff I saw from him last year when Bryce Young was trying to throw to him. Like, Jonathan Mingo specifically was one of the reasons some people were saying, "Hey, Bryce, not actually playing that bad." Mingo has this ability to like swat balls away. You know, I love bringing back the memory of Omer Asik, who would be delivered these perfect entry passes by James Harden, and Asik would basically look like he was playing ping pong, and or like his hands were ping pong paddles.
Yeah, pickleball.
That's Jonathan Mingo. He's out there playing with ping pong paddle hands.
Pickleball Mingo, yeah.
He's like jumping when he doesn't need to jump, and then swatting the ball away. He was one of the best defensive backs in the league last year.
Maybe that's why they got him. Maybe that's why
they had more passes broken up than any other defensive back in the league.
Okay, so that's number one. You could be a Cowboy fan. They were buyers yesterday, and they bought the worst wide receiver in the league.
And the chronology matters because at the very same time, people were, I think Cowboys fans were like, oh, yeah, maybe this will be something. Maybe, and then Washington goes and trades for
Marshawn Lattimore.
Yeah.
That's great. And then the other thing I would say, so you could be the Cowboys. You could be a Bears fan, and the Bears aren't in the worst spot either. They've got Caleb Williams. There's hope there, but he's been getting beat up a lot lately as well. He doesn't look nearly as advanced as C.J. Stroud did this time a year ago. Jaden Daniels is the best rookie quarterback, but still, the Bears, not in an awful spot until you put Matt Eberflus in front of a microphone. Here was Matt Eberflus when he was asked about leaving Caleb Williams in the game, down 20 in the final 2 minutes, in a point in the game in which he had his ankle tweaked.
You talked about why Caleb was in the game down late, you wanting to get some work in for him and the timing of the two-minute operation. How much does pass protection have to factor into that, knowing that, you know, Darnell was out of the game and you were already down to the third-string left tackle, and just how much more difficult that made it on Caleb in those last five plays?
Yeah, you know, it's the starters are left in the game because we're going to fight to the end, and those guys did a nice job with that on defense. You know, offense, you know, we're working operation, like I said, and again, it's got to come down to that, and you know, where that is in terms of that. So I think it's important that we just have that mentality going forward.
Huh? What? He's bad. Boy, he is bad in front of microphones. I can only imagine what his halftime speeches are like, man.
It was, you know, and it's a shame for Bobby Sloak. Talk about missed opportunities, man. This would have been the perfect easy slide into a Chicago Bears head coaching job.
Yeah,
this year
there's still time.
Probably gonna end up being Ben Johnson from the Lions.
Ben Johnson is definitely at the top of the power rankings.
If he wants it.
I don't know that you're gonna get. If you're Ben Johnson or Bobby Slowick, if Bobby can get this thing turned around and they start looking like they're supposed to look, then Bobby Slowick will be right back on all the hot head coaching lists. Hell, if anything, he'll be able to show, like, look, there was a problem and I was able to solve it. Now, granted, you know, it took 9 weeks to get Kenyon Green out of there. Nevertheless, that Chicago job will be open. And if they lose a couple more games, I like my 25-1 on Eberflus to be the next coach fired. I like the value on that. Okay, we're getting a lot of texts in about the trade.
By the way, I'm going to do my part. I haven't texted Mark Brunell in probably like 8 or 9 years or so. We haven't talked or anything. I saw him at the Super Bowl a while back. That was the last time we had a conversation. But I played with him back in Jacksonville. I'm going to start feeding him false information on the Texans.
What is he for the Lions?
He's the quarterback's coach for the Lions.
He's the quarterback's coach.
I'm going to, thank you. That's a vital piece of information here. I just realized, I'm going to start feeding him false. I'm going to tell him, like, I'll tell you what, I'm out on the Texans. I hate them. They did me wrong. They did me wrong, Mark. Here are the keys to the kingdom. This is what you need to do. I'm gonna make up some fake injury news about Will Anderson.
Yeah,
I hope, like, if Will Anderson's out there at practice looking awesome today, I'm gonna be like, hey Mark, you guys can use a tight end to block Will Anderson.
Yeah,
just so you know,
give him the good stuff.
You should lean heavily into that, please.
Yes. here it is. This is from the 5 Hour Energy fan line. Sorry guys, but the Texans doing nothing during the trade deadline other than trading away a player. I'm out on the season. I feel sorry for someone like that. Like, that it takes something this, like, relatively speaking, kind of minor in the grand scheme of constructing an NFL football team. Like, look at all the names that got moved over the last 2 or 3 days. Like, there's one or two names that really move a needle, and the rest are just fodder. And
it's
like,
not,
like
yeah.
that's enough to make you out on a full season. Like, that's, I feel bad for you.
The majority of, I would venture this, somebody fact check me on this. This is just my suspicion. The majority of Super Bowl champions don't make notable trade deadline moves. It's just not the same as baseball, but it's enticing to think about and dream about that big move, like a Christian McCaffrey trade or something like that. That ends up being a big boost to a really competitive team. But it's not at the point where I feel like, oh yeah, it's a standard. This is what you do.
Yeah.
In baseball, it very much feels like, man, if you don't make a move at the deadline, then you just don't want it this year. Football, it's not the same way in football. It's not at that same level. There were 15 trades made yesterday. The vast majority of them weren't with huge impact players, but there's moves out there, and it's disappointing when, you know, you're hoping for the Christmas present that you know your parents can't afford.
Yep.
And when you don't get it, you understand, but you can't be crestfallen over it.
We'll keep breaking it down as we move along here. Let's circle over, a little palate cleanser. Let's circle over to the Astros because they've got plenty of things that their GM needs to do. Dana Brown, the GM meetings are going on this week. He met with the media and talked about the Alex Bregman situation. Are we buying this from Dana Brown that the Astros are as close as it may seem they are, or they feel they are, with Alex Bregman and a contract extension? We'll get to that coming up next.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
5 Hour Energy fan line. 5 Hour Energy, the official energy shot of Sports Radio 610 and football superfans. I wasn't upset they didn't make moves. I was surprised they didn't look for defensive back help. They may have looked for defensive back help. I always look at it like, which of the deals that got made would you have done if you were Nick Caserio? And I don't think I would have done the Marshawn Lattimore trade. I think the Tre'Davious White, the little seventh round pick swaparoo deal, I might have done just because you're not really giving up anything there, and it is veteran depth at that position. We'll keep breaking down the trade deadline. Let's get to Dana Brown. Dana Brown was at the GM meetings in San Antonio and met with the media. Here are Dana Brown's priorities for this offseason.
Yeah, so the biggest priority is third base, you know, without a doubt. You know, I mean, we would love to have Alex Bregman back. You know, I mean, it's our biggest priority. So, I mean, then if we could, you know, do something to firm up, you know, production at first base and, get some help in the outfield, maybe with a nice left-hand bat. Sorry. To work out with Myers and McCormick. I mean, that would be good as well. And then maybe add some more depth to the bullpen. And as I've always told you guys, I'm always in the market for starters. So if we have any opportunity to acquire starters, you know, through trade or whatever, we would do that as well.
This is the first offseason in a few years, Seth, where Astro fans are not going in, or the Astros themselves don't really seem to be going in looking to do anything splashy. They're not in a position where they can do anything splashy. You know, they've got all these dead contracts sitting on the books. They've got to try to re-sign Alex Bregman. You know, even last year, they signed Josh Hader. That was one of the splashiest deals of the offseason. You know, the season before that, Jose Abreu, and you know, was one of the splashiest moves of the year. It didn't work out, but it was a big, splashy, somewhat expensive move. This, you hear him list the priorities, and beyond bringing Bregman back, it's all like, oh, we need a little upgrade at first base, and we get a left-handed bat in the outfield and some bullpen depth. Like, none of those things scream to me. If you're looking at, like, free agency lists, like the top 25 or 30 free agents, other than Alex Bregman, just don't even bother reading the rest of the list. None of those guys are coming to the Astros is how I'm feeling right now.
Meanwhile, Dana Brown is dealing with Jose Abreu's $19.5 million that's still on the books. Rafael Montero's $11.5 million that's still on the books. Is Greinke on the books or not? It's $12,500,000 for
Greinke. Yeah, I think it is. There was like some deferred money in his contract.
There was deferred to 2025.
Yeah.
$12.5 million of Zach Greinke. Everything's come home to roost in terms of either the errors or aggressive spending from the past or whatever it might be. And that's all Alex Bregman's money right there.
Yeah.
That's all. It's just sitting right there, and you're not getting anything for it.
When you put it that way, when you add it up.
Jose Abreu has Alex Bregman's money.
Yeah, pretty much.
Now, obviously, that's for 1 year. It's not, you know, on into the extension, but still.
Let's hear from Dana Brown. What is your mindset right now at third base and with Bregman?
Our mindset right now is that he's not going elsewhere and that we want to sign him. So if he ends up going elsewhere, we'll cross that bridge when we get there. But I'm going into this offseason with the thought process that we're going to get Bregman back. Hopefully, you know, we can do it. And as I said, you know, the conversations with Scott have been productive.
All right, one more. So you're talking about the chances of bringing Bregman back. What are the chances you're bringing Bregman back?
Yeah, we've had a lot of discussions with Scott Boras, multiple conversations. So we hope that they've been productive, and we're hoping that, you know, some good things happen.
We feel like they have a decent chance.
I think we have a really good chance.
Really good chance. You heard it there at the end. I think we got a really good chance.
I'm with you on this. That Javier is coming back. Javier is feeling great 12 hours before he gets Tommy John surgery. Yeah. All right,
I'm not feeling great about it right now. And this, my feeling on bringing Bregman back, and why I might, like, if you're truly about keeping the, you know, air quotes, championship window open, you know, Jim Crane has said, on my watch, we will always strive to be as competitive as we can be and strive to be a championship level team. This is the first one of all the guys who've left, and I'm not saying Bregman hasn't left yet, but this is the first one where, A, there is no great solution to backfill him. Even on the free agency market, there's no great solution to go get. Alex Bregman is so far and away the best third baseman on the market that they're really going to be like they're really going to be struggling for answers at third base if Bregman doesn't come back. And number two, this is not like Springer leaving a team. Now, Springer left after the COVID year, so it's not a great example. But let's use 2019 as the first, as the last full season before Springer. This isn't Springer leaving maybe the deepest team of the last 15 years in that lineup with Kyle Tucker coming up. You know, with Kyle Tucker ascending. Right. I know Tucker plays right field, Springer plays center field, but at least you had some a major bat in the outfield. This isn't Correa leaving and Peña coming up. This isn't any of the pitchers leaving, knowing that you've got this machine that just cranks out big league pitching.
Right.
There's no solution, and Springer leaving was he was leaving a 107-win team from 2019. Carlos Correa was leaving a team that made it to the World Series. Bregman is leaving a team, if he were to leave, that has gone from, in the last few full seasons, gone from over 100 wins to 90 wins to now 88 wins, has serious salary issues right now. Like, that's the thing I think about Bregman. Like, I wonder how Bregman looks at the Astros. I wonder what he sees in the Astros right now.
I think in the big difference with Bregman, too, is in a lot of ways, he's the ideal guy to bring in to a team that's right on the brink. In 2000, this version of Bregman would have been an awesome guy to bring onto the Astros in 2017.
Yeah.
Like, all right, guy with playoff experience, knows how it's done. He's a consummate baseball nerd that's just constantly looking for an edge, helps his teammates out, you know, has an established track record of that. It's not like Carlos Correa. Remember Carlos Correa all of a sudden in his free agency year is when we started hearing about what a great leader he was?
Yeah.
You know, it's been more steady and consistent with that with Alex Bregman. And that's ironically enough, it makes it feel like, how much does Alex Bregman's leadership and everything else factor into this team? Let's pretend he's a free agent. Is he going to be the guy that all of a sudden really turns it into a team that's got a great pipeline and that is going to just push them right over the top? I don't think he is.
No.
You know, and it's not because of anything he can or can't have done. It's just that's where the team is right now.
If they lose Bregman, then I would be shopping Kyle Tucker and Framber Valdez and try to replenish the farm system and get some young guys in here and do what you have called more of like a reset than a rebuild. You've still got some good players on the team. You might still be able to be competitive. It's a division that's very winnable. You know, that's the thing that the Astros have in common with the Texans, is it even as we sit here and wring our hands over all the moves that are getting made, not getting made, bad contracts, this and that. The fact of the matter is, with or without Bregman, they're probably still the favorite in the American League West because the division is so bad.
Yeah.
And so I do wonder, because I don't think Tucker's coming back. We've heard nothing about what's been discussed with Framber. Framber never gets asked about to Dana Brown. All the questions are always about Bregman and Tucker. They're never about Framber. And Framber is, you know, as unfortunate as the occasional bad Framber sightings are that show up at really bad times sometimes, like in the postseason, he's still one of the 5 to 10 best starting pitchers in the American League. I think that's safe to say.
Yeah.
So I would start if Bregman signs elsewhere, I would be shopping Tucker and Framber and look at this as a way like, okay, maybe we're closing the window for a year or two. You know what I mean? Like the window,
yeah, we're
the window's
yeah,
still
we're
there.
Taking
we're
a
just,
hiatus.
We're closing it. We're just, you know what? We're drawing the shades. It's
you're
open.
Still in, the expanded playoffs change things a little bit.
Yeah.
And okay, you can still be a team that's in the mix and what have you, but without being as high powered as you used to be. But yeah, because if you let go of Bregman, then I feel like you've already, that's the emotional barrier. Yeah. That's the, okay, everything from the past and everything that Bregman could be or is right now, but man, he's going to be under contract until he's 36 or 37 years old. Okay, you rip that Band-Aid off and feel that pain, then yeah, what are we going to be overly sentimental about Kyle Tucker?
Can't be.
Or overly sentimental about Framber Valdez?
Nope. Can't be. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you on a Wednesday. Big Wednesday today, man. Texans are back at practice. This is one of the biggest Sunday night games, one of the biggest primetime games at NRG Stadium ever coming up on Sunday. And one of the first things we'll be looking for, other than injured players being back at practice, what is the left to right permutation of offensive linemen? Who are the ones that get trotted out there? I've got four potential scenarios here. I'm curious which one Seth Pain thinks would be the best one and which one we think will be the one the team chooses. We'll go through that coming up next.
America's favorite place to watch football is Stadium Swim, located at Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. Catch all the biggest games at a viewing experience built for sports fans. Chill in one of their six pools on three different levels for a perfect view of their massive screen. Plenty of seating options from cozy daybeds to private, temperature-controlled cabanas. Stadium Swim. Book your spot today at CircaLasVegas.com.
For the past three seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a fourth season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.